Transform your life today. Welcome to Super Coach with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is the four happinesses. We'll figure it out. Numbers to call if you want coaching on any area of your life. 866-254-1579. It's toll free. 866-254-1579. Or you can reach the show from outside the United States on 001-760-918-4300. And I'm just going to set the table before we go to callers. A few years ago, I did what was called a Vanguard program, training coaches and using distinctions from positive psychology, which is a field that really only started in 2000, I think, is when it became a legitimately recognized field. Up until then, I guess you were only allowed negative psychology. And really, positive psychology, it's the difference is between studying health and what works as opposed to studying illness and what doesn't work. And one of the distinctions that they've made in the research into positive psychology is they've developed a notion of three types of happiness. And Dr. Martin Seligman, who's the sort of founder of the field, he talks about those in his book, and he talks about them in the program. And they're interesting. Now, the reason this show is called The Four Happinesses is because there are actually a couple of ways, maybe we could call it the five happinesses, of talking about happiness that don't necessarily directly relate to these three. But I do want to start with these three. So I'm going to talk a little bit about this, then we're going to talk to you on the phones. The numbers again to call, 866-254-1579, or from outside the United States, 760-001, 760-918-4300. For me, the first happiness is pleasure. And for me, when I first started exploring pleasure, okay, this could go in all sorts of directions, but the first time I felt really, really alive in my body that I can remember, I was actually 15 and I was watching a rerun of I Dream of Jeannie. Now, again, this could still go anywhere, but as it happened, I was sitting cross-legged with my spine straight. And if you'd looked at me, I would have looked like I was in meditation. I didn't really know about meditation then, but I would have looked like the classic pose of a meditator. And I now know that that position facilitates the flow of energy through the body. And so what I was feeling was the natural flow of energy through my body. And I felt an overwhelming sense of peace and well-being. Now, I now know, with my scientific mind, that that was an endorphin release. That what happens is we get, sometimes through sexual activity, sometimes through exercise, sometimes just through laughter, sometimes through relaxation, we get this release of this chemical called the endorphin or the endomorphin, and it's the body's morphine. And that feeling of pleasure in our body, now we always attribute it to whatever it is outside us that gives us the pleasure, but in fact, the feeling of pleasure is a direct response to the chemical release inside our body. And I didn't get that then. So I spent the next 5 years trying to recreate that feeling because it was the most wonderful feeling I'd ever felt. And I did it. I tried to sit in that same posture. I studied meditation. I experimented with drugs. I'm sorry, I did. I watched reruns of classic 1960s television. You know, everything. I was willing to try anything. And what I realized is, as I moved into my 20s, I thought, well, this is just silly. I'm not going to worry about inner delight. I'm going to focus on career and focus on family. And you know, I remember thinking, well, you know, I don't have time for bliss and a mortgage. But the reason I thought that was because I thought pleasure still had to come from outside. I didn't get that was actually just my body's release of its own pleasurable chemicals, and it's something that you can experience in any moment. So here's a little experiment you can do, and we're going to go to the phones in a minute, but try this. Just take a nice deep breath and just become aware of your whole body from head to toe, and just find a part of your body that feels especially nice, and it might be there's a warm tingle in your hands or a soft fuzzy feeling in your chest, and just tune into that good feeling and keep part of your attention on that part of your body that feels good. And imagine the feeling as a color. What color would it be? What's your favorite color? And just let that color, let that feeling spread up to the top of your head and down to the bottom of your feet. And now just look around, wherever you are, just look around and just keep part of your attention on that nice feeling inside you. And if you feel the nice feeling starts to fade or you suddenly become aware, oh, I forgot the feeling, I'm looking around the room, just get back to that good feeling. Just return to it. You close your eyes as long as it's safe and appropriate to do so. And when you've got that good feeling back, you can open your eyes and just look around again. And what I'm going to encourage you to do is just stay with that good feeling with part of your mind as you listen to the show, because you can listen easy. This isn't a show you have to, I must pay attention, I must take note. Just relax. It's going in. The good stuff is going in. The good stuff you get to keep. And just keep some of that good feeling with you. So that's pleasure. That's just what pleasure is. And pleasure is just one of the happinesses. So we're going to talk more about the other happinesses, but let's go ahead and talk to you. Let's go to Boston. And let's talk to Ricky. Ricky, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
How you doing?
I am well.
I hope my question isn't too profound and too general, but I'll do my best. I went through, sir, a series of really almost life catastrophic losses over the last few years, and that's the bad news. But the good news is I got involved about a year ago, in studying the work of Esther and Jerry Hicks' Law of Attraction.
Yeah.
And it's been working. That's the good news. And so in the last year or so, I've been really literally rebuilding my life on every single level. You name a level, I'm having to rebuild it from either losing all my money or whatever. And I've been able to manifest a couple of new work options and that type of thing. Have not manifested yet a new woman in my life, but working on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so here's my question to you. Because I do meditate regularly. Do you have any sort of tips, tricks, or ideas on how to really let go of that thought habit when I start thinking I miss my old me, I miss my old self, because I've changed? Do you know what I mean? You don't go through a whole lot of losses and pain and that type of thing, going to the dark places and then come back out into the light again without being a different person in some pretty significant spiritual ways. And so I really want to do everything
I'm sorry, Rick. I just want to check that I'm following. So what you're saying is, do you have any tips or tricks on how to deal with it when you have the thought, God, I wish I was shallow again?
No, I was never shallow.
Oh, okay. So it was never. It was just there were things you liked
in my whole life.
Okay, so there were things you
but
liked.
What I'm saying is I think in some ways spiritually I'm better now. I wasn't shallow at all before, but I do miss some of the aspects of my old self, and yet I don't think it's productive to try to recreate, to try to push myself backwards.
Can you give me an example of one of the aspects of your old self that you miss?
Well, sure, when I was with a domestic partner and on top of the world, and when I had over, you know, $100,000+ in the bank and don't now, and I'm trying to earn it back. I mean, I miss that.
Oh, so but the circumstances you're talking about.
Yeah, but it's more of like the feeling inside, you know, and I'm trying to...
Okay,
I recognize that it's sort of that connection to source energy that probably I miss, you know.
Okay, let's just do a little experiment, Ricky.
Sure.
Okay. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to think of that on top of the world feeling.
Got it.
Okay. And I want you to actually, instead of trying not to go there, I want you to just really think back to a time where you really felt that. And step back into that experience. So you're looking through your eyes so that you can see what you saw and hear what you heard and feel that on top of the world feeling in your body.
I can do that.
Okay. Now what I want you to do is, as you do that, I want you to take your thumb and middle finger of your right hand, and when you're really in that feeling, when you're really going, oh, this is great, I want you to squeeze. I want you to squeeze your thumb and that finger. Middle. You got that?
Yeah.
All right, brilliant. So here's the thing, okay? There's nothing wrong with you having that feeling in your body.
Well, I think I was afraid to go back to some of those memories because I didn't want to get melancholy. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, you sound terribly melancholy.
No, I did not get melancholy when we just did this.
No, melancholy is what's happened when you mix a cantaloupe with a small dog. It's just look, the thing is, the feeling is yours, and to deny yourself, to deny your body those simple pleasures of good feelings doesn't serve anybody, and it doesn't serve your energy or your vibration. So really, what I would say is allow yourself to go back, allow yourself to take those good feelings forward with you, and know that it's not the circumstances that create the feelings, it's you.
So you're saying I can still feel dynamic and a dynamo even though I've lost the money and lost the partner.
Absolutely. Mike Todd
I am in a pretty good space
Mike Todd was one of the most famous film producers in the 50s. He was married to Elizabeth Taylor. I think he was number four.
Oh, but
he was the one she said she really loved. And one of my favorite quotes of all time came from him. He said, "I've been broke, but I've never been poor."
Yeah, yeah.
And you don't have to give up any of the mojo. You don't have to give up any of that good feeling. You don't have to give up any of that dynamism just because your circumstances are temporarily not what they were the last time you felt it.
Yeah, I mean, I do have some good things manifesting, and I'm working on trying to get some more.
And even if you didn't, you still are allowed to feel good. Because feeling bad doesn't actually make us more productive. It's this weird idea we've got in our culture that though if I feel really bad, then I'll do stuff.
Oh, no, it doesn't make us more productive.
It doesn't at all. So
do you have any like books or tapes or anything that you've written on these happinesses?
Absolutely. If you just look on the Hay House site right by where you're probably tuned in, it'll show there'll be a link to both Feel Happy Now and and there's some Effortless Success CDs that I think you might enjoy. And I think Supercoach isn't available in America yet, but you can get all that stuff just right through Hay House.
Well, when I can afford them, I'll look into them. But thank
okay.
you.
It's a pleasure, Ricky. Thank you for phoning
Have
in.
Have a great day.
All right. And, you know, this is the thing. What Ricky was saying there, it's not that unusual. It's not that unusual at all that people are kind of scared to feel good when circumstances aren't yet the way that they want them because they think that if I feel good, I won't do anything about it. And it's almost 180 degrees opposite from the truth. The more alive you're feeling in yourself, the more contentment you're feeling in yourself, the more well-being you're having in yourself, you're just allowing up, the more drawn to do things that are going to make a difference you are. You might not be so inclined to do a lot of busy work, but you'll absolutely keep moving forward to create what you want to create in your life. And it's so much easier. Anything you can do with unhappiness, you can do much, much easier with happiness. Let's go to Barbara in San Diego. Barbara, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm quite aware of trying to work on happiness and trying to find happiness and joy more every day. But I'm having a lot more challenge with it right now, with some things happening in the marriage and trying to stop the negative, worried, constant chatter in my head and keep remaining in the happiness mode. I listen to even things like Abraham and do all kinds of reading and writing, but just trying to get some guidance on maybe some more coping skills as to how to do this.
So that's I got it, Barbara. I can kind of feel it too as you talk. Here's the thing. What is difficult, and I would even go so far as to say perhaps not really possible because the mechanism's not designed that way, is to stop thinking thoughts that you don't want. Because the nature of thought is responsive. When you think about a thought, that thought gets bigger. And
yeah.
To try and substitute a positive thought for a negative thought, I don't know if I've used this analogy on the show before, but it's an analogy I use with my clients sometimes. A thought is just like a balloon. Until you blow air into it, until you blow it up, it's just a flobbly thing. But we give it life. We give our thoughts life. We empower them. We pour ourselves into them. We go, yeah, God, that's really important. Oh, it shouldn't be that way. That's what I really want. And the balloon gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and it starts to sit between us and what we're looking at. So we can only see what we see through the filter, through the membrane of the balloon. Can you imagine that?
Yeah.
So trying to stop thinking that and start thinking something else. That's like if we said all the negative balloons were red and all the positive balloons were blue, that would be like just trying to swap out the red balloons for the blue balloons.
Okay.
Now what you can do is you can let go of the balloon. You can let the air out of the balloon. In other words, you don't have to change the thought or stop thinking the thought. You can just let the thought flow on by. Because if you're holding a balloon and you let it go, what happens?
It just floats away.
Just falls away. And it's the same thing with a thought. If you hold on to a thought, and the way we hold on to a thought is we think it. We go, oh, yes, yes, this is, oh, God, I shouldn't think this. No, this is a bad thought. Oh, this is a horrible thought. God, imagine what would happen to my life if I thought this more. Oh, this would be awful. If we just let it go, it just falls away. And we go, oh, boy, that was a horrible thought. And then another thought comes along. And each thought is just an invitation. It's just an opportunity. It's just a chance to tune in and go, do I want to make my life about this thought for a while? Not really. You know, it would be like getting a bunch of invitations to parties. And you go, don't really fancy the party at the Rockefellers. Ooh, Paris Hilton. Ooh, that's going to be ugly. No, I'm not going to go to that. Ooh, a party to my best friend's house. Yeah, I'm going to go there. And if you have that kind of relationship with your thoughts where you get, they don't have any power. We have power. And we sometimes give that power to our thoughts, and then the thoughts seem really powerful. It can be a lot easier to let it go, and especially in a marriage. Especially in a marriage. You know, marriages are fascinating to me because, you know, I'm in one, but have been for 21 years. But also because it's an almost unnatural relationship, you know, in the sense, we've created this thing, and yet it can be incredibly satisfying and incredibly meaningful.
Yes, that's it. This has largely been for 33 years.
And what tends to happen, and I don't know if this is what's happening for you, but what tends to happen is when we're first with someone, there are things about them that we like, and there are things about them that we don't particularly like. But we so enjoy being with them that we're willing to just kind of not worry about the things we don't like because we just feel so good when we're with them. But then over time, because we're not feeling so good all the time anymore when we're with them, those things that have always been there but didn't used to bother us start to bother us. They start to seem important. They start to seem like deal breakers, like maybe, hey, I'm just going to go out on a limb here. Is he perhaps not as emotionally supportive as he could be?
Yes, he's had a lot of distractions, and we've had a lot of death and illness in the family, and I've sometimes gotten more involved with, even though it's his family, his things, and he's kind of gone off and done other things and gotten very used to not playing as much, not as being as much of a companion, which to me is, it's almost stronger than a romantic relationship. We're strong on all fronts, working and living together and everything. We work together as well as play together and really enjoy each other still when we do play together, but it's really been almost non-existent for several months, and I think it's probably gone on longer than that, and I'm really missing going back to that relationship, but he's having a lot of conflict as to what he really wants, plus he has some other opportunities coming up that might change things too.
And is that a conversation that you guys is that a conversation that you can be in with him without going to your dark place?
Well, we have been trying to talk about, we even started going to a counselor, but we won't be able to see her again for 3 weeks, which we kind of need to see sooner, I think. We've started talking, but she showed us how to start communicating a bit more. I think there's been a breakdown there. But we've just been such close friends and everything for so long and just had a really good relationship on every level, even physically, that this is a real change. I feel like I'm losing my best friend.
Okay, so right there, that thought, I feel like I'm losing my best friend. If I was selling a movie, I live in Hollywood, so it comes up. If I was selling a movie and I wanted to go, it's a romantic comedy, and the strap line would be, I feel like I'm losing my best friend. And everyone in the cinema would go, oh. I'm not trying to make light of it in the sense that it doesn't matter, that it's not worth working through. But when you tell the story that way, that brings up certain feelings of pathos and loss. And that actually makes it harder to communicate. Because when you're communicating from that place of pain, what gets communicated is what?
Sadness, negativity.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's not a conversation. Hey, can we talk for 10 minutes about my misery?
No, actually, I'm trying to change it to the reason I've even been upset is I want to play with him more. It's a big compliment to him, and we still have a lot of fun, and I want this relationship to work, and I'm willing to either compromise or do what's necessary within reason, as long as, you know, we meet in the middle on this. And
so here's a really interesting conversation that you may or may not choose to have.
Okay.
I'll make up a name for him. Let's call him Bob.
Okay.
So, hey, Bob, I want you to know, I know I've been a little, you know, unhappy for a little while. And I want you to know that I've really thought about it. And what really matters to me is that I really love you and I really value our time together and our relationship. And I want you to know that I'm here. And I want you to know that I would love to create more time with you. And that if you can't do that right now, that's okay. And that I love you. Can you imagine that conversation? If you got to that place where you were really just telling the truth?
I've actually said almost verbatim what you said. Exactly that.
Let me just check, Barbara. Did Bob respond by saying, "Get away from me, woman"?
Well, he didn't say get away from me, but he said he's really confused. He does say he loves me and always will and always will be my best friend no matter where we end up, together or apart. But he's confused as to what he really wants.
Okay, so let me ask you this, because I don't have Bob on the phone. I've got Barbara on the phone.
Yeah.
So what do you really want?
I think he really wants us to stay together. You know, now I'm starting to wonder, because his interests have become very narrow, whereas I'm game for anything. And I'm very interested in even doing a lot of the things.
Okay, so hang on. What you're doing is you're telling me lots of stuff, but the question was...
Okay, what do I really want?
What do you really want?
I want us to stay together. We do have a lot of fun, and there is a lot of love, I believe there still is here, and a lot of the bones of the marriage that were here at the beginning.
Okay, so here's what I'd like to do, Barbara. Here's what I'd like to do, because there's so much more than enough there that this is absolutely a relationship that can keep going. What I'd like to do is, if you'll stay on the line after I let you go and give your details to, I think it's going to be Joe that you're going to talk to on the board, and I'm going to send you out a copy of a book.
Thank you very much.
Because there's a number of lovely relationship books out there, but there's one in particular called The Relationship Handbook by George Pransky that I think when you read it, it'll make an awful lot of sense of what's going on with you. And it'll give you a lot of hope for what you can do.
Okay, I really appreciate that and talking to everything.
Thank you, Barbara. Thanks for phoning in.
Thanks very much.
Okay, this is one of those things, you know, that we all go through. You know, things don't always stay the way we'd like them to be. Things don't always kind of work out exactly as we like. You know, there are times where, you know, our relationships do go through these little dips. And if we stay clear about what we want through that, then we will find a way through that. And there are ways through that. And that leads to the second happiness, which is satisfaction. The first happiness was pleasure. The second is satisfaction. And the difference between pleasure and satisfaction, if pleasure comes from eating chocolate cake and getting a full body massage and shopping and drinking beer while watching football on a large screen TV, I'm just saying, then, you know, the equivalent satisfactions are making the chocolate cake, giving the full body massage, making or designing the clothes, playing football with friends. And while pleasure is absolutely a part of it, sometimes there's a real satisfaction that comes from going for it, that comes from absolutely involving yourself. Pleasure gives your body pleasure. Satisfaction nourishes your soul. Doesn't make satisfaction better than pleasure, but it's another aspect to happiness, and it can exist even in, and sometimes most, in the midst of crisis. We're going to be back with more on happiness and more of your calls right after the break. If you enjoy the kind of stuff we talk about on the show, go to www.geniuscatalyst.com, and there's a lot of free resources there. I'll talk to you in about 3 minutes.
888-4300.
Real strategies for real change. This is Supercoach with Michael Neal.
We're back. We're talking about the four happinesses, and we're talking with you. Talk about pleasure. I've talked about satisfaction. We'll talk a little bit about a third happiness, which is meaning. There's a story about a journalist who pursued Mahatma Gandhi through a train station. He was trying to get an interview, and Gandhi kept politely declining to respond to the questions. And as the train was pulling out of the station, the reporter called out, "Please, give me your message for the people." And without hesitation, Gandhi shouted back, "My life is my message." And I remember when I first heard that story, I was really struck, because I thought, gee, if my life were my message, what would the message be? And I remember trying on a bunch of things. I've talked about some of this on the radio before, but I remember thinking, help yourself by helping others. Joy is the pathway to success. And then I kind of thought, you know what? I'm not actually sure that that's the message my life is giving out right now. And I got a little more real and did a little bit more soul searching. And I realized that at that time, the message that my life was giving out was set big goals and then kind of half-ass your way towards achieving them and then blame everybody but yourself so you don't have to feel bad when you fail. Now, that wasn't really the message I wanted my life to give, but it was by really noticing it. What it did is it allowed me to change it. I remember I've always loved there's a Quaker admonition, let your life speak. And I've always loved that, but I realized at that point that I also needed to put some real thought into what it is that I wanted my life to say. And that's what the meaning of your life comes from. From your deciding what you want your life to be about. So here's a little thing you can do, and I'm going to go back to the phones in a minute. If you want to get in, 866-254-1579, toll free. Ask yourself that question. If my life were my message, what would the message be? And again, this isn't what would I like the message to be, what would be a really cool message. Just take a look in the mirror, and you know, even if you don't like what you see, knowing it's fine if you do, just what's the message right now? I've done this with people, and you know, they come up with things like, well, do unto others as much as you can get away with. Or it's never too late to blame someone else for your life. Or one this just made me laugh. Somebody said, oh yeah, the message of my life, make resolutions, never follow through on them, hate yourself for it. Once you really see the message, it's kind of funny. It's always kind of funny. And then when you've seen the real message, you can ask yourself, okay, well, what would I like the message of my life to be? What do I want my life to be about? What do I want the meaning of my life to have been? What message would I like people to take away from experiencing my presence and being a part of my time here on Earth? And then you start to come up with some kind of beautiful things, like always do your best and your best gets better. The fastest way to future rewards is by following present joys. The question is irrelevant. Love is the answer. And then you can look at, okay, if that was what I wanted to make my life about, what changes might I make? Well, if I wanted my life to be about always doing your best and the best getting better, I might try to do my best even when part of me wants to just get away with it. I might focus on continual improvement in my relationships, in my work, with my health. I might choose to participate fully in everything I do. There's no right answers here. But whatever you come up with, you can ground it by just taking a concrete action in the next 24 hours. So let's say the life message that you want your life to be about is, I want my life to just be about love. That's what I want my life to be about. That's what is going to bring meaning to my life. Well, then you might want to focus on your heart more than your head. You might not want to spend so much time trying to figure everything out. You might decide, you know what, when I don't know what to do, I'm just going to love it. But then do something tangible. Maybe on your way home from work today, send loving energy to everyone you see. Maybe just take a minute now to go inside and really just let that feeling of love come up inside you. Let it fill you so that it radiates out from you, so that everybody who's in your presence today feels it. And there's a real happiness. There's a sort of a deep happiness. So as well as pleasure, which just comes from the chemicals in our body, and as well as satisfaction, which comes usually from actually taking on a challenge, from doing something a little bit difficult and worthwhile, you can also create and add meaning, deciding what you want your life to be about and making it about that. Well, we'll talk about the fourth and maybe even a fifth happiness later, but let's go back to the phones. Let's talk to Lisa in New York. Lisa, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi, Michael. I guess my question is, you're talking about meaning now, and I just wrote something that I think is I guess the meaning for my life, and that's service of others. For so long, I've been doing volunteer work and have been home with my children, and now I need to transition into paid employment, mm-hmm. and I'm trying to figure out what that will be. It will be service, and I've been a substitute teacher, but I don't know that I want to be in the school district like that. So I'm just, I guess, looking for something where I could serve others, and I think health and wellness is important to me.
So can we make a distinction?
Sure.
Because service of others is something that you can bring to pretty much any job on the planet.
Right.
In other words, a janitor, if they're doing it with the intention of being of service to others, is of incredible service to others.
Right.
You know, a watchmaker can be of incredible service to others. So that doesn't rule out any profession.
Right.
So what the question that I would start with is, what would you love to do? If you got to name your ticket, right? I am the grand giver of jobs. Lisa, welcome. Pick your job and I shall give it unto thee.
Okay. I would like to work with families and children to make their lives better by through health and wellness and trying to help people, especially with the obesity on the incline.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would like to help people in that arena.
Fantastic. So what do you know so far about that arena?
I know that it's about healthier choices, and I actually had some ideas, but I don't know where to go with that. Like, I was thinking, you know, of volunteer things and something like locally, you know, farmers produce all of these crops that maybe they have a surplus of.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking, well, why can't, if they have this surplus, why can't we take those to people that may need that and may not be able to afford it because maybe produce is more expensive than a boxed meal.
Mm-hmm.
So how would I incorporate, you know, that giving from others and helping the people that really need it?
Do you have any idea how cool that is as an idea?
I thought so.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's inspiring. I mean, you just said that and already I'm thinking of, ooh, how can I help her with that? Mm-hmm. And if you talk with people about that, and you say, look, this is what I want to do. Got any ideas? This is what I want to do. I'm a little bit stuck. Got any ideas?
Right.
You'll find that people will go, oh my gosh, that's so cool. Let me talk to you. And that's the thing. That's the difference between trying to, okay, well, how can I be of service to others? And knowing whatever I do, I'm going to be of service to others because that's who I am.
Right.
And what I'd love to do is this. If you haven't heard of Jamie Oliver,
okay,
he's a British chef.
Right.
And he started a program, and I think it's called School Dinners.
Okay.
But he is on an active quest to do pretty much exactly what you're talking about,
okay,
which is to bring healthier foods into the school systems, healthier foods into kids' lives. And that might be a nice place to start, is just look at what's going on with that and seeing if there are things that you can get inspired by from that, things you can piggyback onto. There's probably a community around that you can begin to connect with.
Okay.
And just start playing.
Because that's inspiring. Yeah, I also thought that, I know, like the cooperative extension, that kind of program could also, you know, with that surplus, maybe help help those families also to learn how to can and freeze those products so that they could even have it year-round.
So, it's clear to me just listening, this is such a great thing for you to be doing. Because you're not actually stuck, even.
No.
You've got loads of ideas, so go.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Fantastic, Lisa.
Thanks.
You know, this is that was great because so often, you know, people say, well, I think I might kind of like to do this. If you do know what you'd love to do, go do that. I mean, it's, you know, my son's been asking me since he was about 12 years old, is it okay that I don't really quite know what I want to do yet? And obviously I say no. But if you do know what you'd love to do, go do that. Because there's an energy to that when it really is your love, your passion, something that you just authentically are inspired to do, that brings with it the path to get there. It's what the whole You Can Have What You Want book is about. That when you get really clear and honest about what you want, everything in the universe starts to conspire to help you get it. And things start to unfold as if by design. And it's just the most beautiful experience. And, you know, if you're not clear on what you want, that's okay. You can continue exploring and playing and learning. But if you are clear, go for it. Let's talk to Daniela. Daniela, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
I want to be a super coach like you.
You want to be a super coach like me?
or
maybe like well, maybe like you. How about that?
Maybe like me, yeah. Or exactly. I was going to say as you or even better.
Okay, but, so what's your current, where are you in relation to that right now?
Where am I? Okay, well, I'm living in New York, and I'm moving to California.
Mm-hmm.
Because, it just happened to be like that. My son's father is moving there and with his family, and I'm moving there with my husband, and we're all going to be in the same place, which is great, because for the last 6 years, I've been going back and forth between Mexico and New York.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so that being said, you know, now that you were talking about, like, what would we want to be our lives about or lives to say, you know, I definitely want my life to say that we can get rid of the limitations, and the limitations are only in our mind. And the way I've learned through you and through NLP is that I feel that NLP is the most powerful tool right now to show that and to be a life coach teaching NLP. So what would be the next step now that I know what I want to be?
Well, I will tell you the two next steps.
Uh-huh.
The first one is to stay on the line because and give them your address, and we're going to send you out a copy of Super Coach. I know it's not available in the U.S. yet, but I'll get you a copy.
Thank you.
And the second thing is to send an email to radio@geniuscatalyst.com with a request to be put on the Super Coach list. And in about 2 weeks, I'm going to be sending out an announcement because we're actually going to be running the very first ever Super Coach training.
Yay.
For people who want to do this kind of work with others. And that'll get you started.
Awesome. In the meantime, if you need a volunteer assistant or whatever, you can count on me too.
Thank you very much. So go ahead, send that email. I look forward to checking in with you in a few weeks when the program, when we've got the dates locked in.
I'll do that, Michael. Thanks.
All right, Daniela. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Let's go on to Valerie in Montana. Valerie, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi, Michael. I have a question about direction. I always think I want to do this and that and move to New York and then travel here. And then in a month, my enthusiasm fizzles out. And so I'm just wondering, how do I know what direction to focus on? Because I seem to always want to focus in a direction, but I don't seem to maintain it. So how do I go about working with that? Do you have any advice?
You know, it's an interesting thing. I don't know if this is going to be true for you, but a lot of people who call in or talk to me with that kind of a thing, they're almost looking for which direction will make me happy.
Right.
And when we're talking about in this context, since we're talking about the four happinesses or the five happinesses or however many happinesses it turns out there are, you can find and take pleasure in anything. And if you don't believe that, just look on the internet. You can find satisfaction more easily in some things than others, and that's different for different people because satisfaction is to do with sort of bringing your skills to a challenge, to something that feels worthy to you. You can find happiness by creating meaning, and in the same way as our last caller wanted to be of service to others, she could do that in any arena. It wouldn't matter what she did. She could do that. In a similar way, the fourth happiness, if we're going to stay with that, is contentment. And contentment, with the difference with contentment is contentment's just a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Contentment doesn't have anything to do with circumstance at all. In a way, none of them do. But contentment, it's easier. My favorite quote about contentment kind of sums it all up. It comes from a philosopher called Timothy Miller, who said, "You can resent your bald spot or be glad you have a head."
I like that.
And the thing about contentment is that when you just declare yourself content, you just choose to be content, regardless, you're not going to wait. You'll still work on whatever you work on, but you're just going to be happy now. It doesn't actually lead to apathy. It doesn't actually lead to indifference. You get really energized. You get really enthusiastic, and you start to feel more instead of just feeling better. And you start to enjoy what's going on, what is, instead of trying to make it into what isn't. And in a lot of Eastern cultures, in Buddhism and Hinduism, contentment's actually revered as the ultimate goal. You know, all there is all there is, and all there is enough. In the Jewish religion, dayenu is a word that translates as that would have been enough. You know, whatever happened, if all that happened was I was born onto the planet, that would have been enough. If all that happened is I was born onto the planet and I had parents that loved me, that would have been enough. If all that happened, and it goes on, and when you come at which direction to go in from that point of view, that happiness isn't something you're going to have to find outside of you. That it isn't something that if you just find the right direction, then you can be happy. Then choosing your direction becomes as simple as, you know what, this really interests me right now, I'm going to do this. Oh, now this really interests me, I'm going to do this. And the idea that you've got to choose, that you have to find the direction, well, that's just an idea.
I think sometimes I don't know what's interesting to me right now. I'm always looking for, well, what's interesting?
Well, okay, right now, okay, you phoned into the show.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, why did you phone into the show?
Because this is interesting to me.
Okay, so you do know what's interesting to you right now.
Yeah.
This. And if you want to, you can interest yourself in anything. See, again, it's another thing. It's the inside out versus outside in. Most of us have happiness wired outside in. If I can just find the right circumstances, people, job, activities, meditation practice, whatever it is, then I will be happy. And when you turn that on its head, and when you just go, you know what, I'm just going to be happy. Now, what do I want to do? And something will come up. And if nothing comes up, don't do anything for a little while, because something will come up. There's an exercise I give. If you listen to the show regularly, and if you don't, join me for lunch again next week. But if you listen to the show regularly, I'm sure you'll have heard me do an exercise with people called the comfy chair. And the comfy chair is an exercise where I ask people to sit in a comfy chair and just sit there until they have an honest-to-goodness, authentic inspiration to get up and do something. And sometimes people sit there for a couple hours. Sometimes people get up really quickly because what happens is their mind starts chattering. They go, oh, you've got to do this. You can't just sit here. You've got to do this. But if you stay with it, what will start to happen is you'll go, huh, there's a different quality to that inspired voice. It feels different. It sounds different. It looks different when I think about something that is sort of deeper for me, is more authentic for me. And once you start to get that distinction, it gets easier and easier to listen to that voice of inspiration, to that still small voice within, and easier to just let the mind chatter go. It's not that it goes away completely, at least it hasn't for me, Lord knows, but it does get less and less compelling. It becomes more and more like background noise.
Okay, that's helpful.
And so what you're doing, in a way, instead of looking outside you for the direction, you're tuning in inside you to the compass. And true north is always going to feel like inspiration.
And now what book do you have that talks about that?
You can have what you want. Very first book. It's the very first thing that we talk about.
Okay. Well, I'm not familiar with your work, but I'm definitely interested. I'll have to check
well,
it out.
Thank you
the
for joining me.
The first time I've tuned into the show. Yeah, thank you.
Oh, fantastic. So please come back and join me for lunch again next week.
Absolutely.
All right, Valerie. Thank you for phoning in. We got time, I think, to do one more. I seem to have two people from Saskatchewan on the line with the same name. So I'm going to click on this one. Hello. Who is this and what can I do for you today? Is it Geety?
Are you talking to me?
I think I must be because I can hear you.
Okay. No, my name is Eric.
Eric. Okay. I'm sorry. It's come up wrong on my screen. Tell me about yourself, Eric. What can I do for you today?
Well, I've had a very nice long career in high-tech area, and a few years back I started switching over to the health and healing area. And I have this tendency to want things to happen quickly,
mm-hmm.
structured, organized, analytical mind kind of thing. And I'm wondering what you can share with me as far as getting out of that mold and accepting what it is.
So what is it that you think that you need to accept that you're not accepting?
That things are not going to happen on my schedule.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it was very interesting. I had a conversation with my coach this week about this. We're talking about the notion of choice and of choosing. And he gave me an example where he held up an imaginary chocolate ice cream cone and vanilla ice cream cone. And he said, chocolate or vanilla, choose. And I chose vanilla. And he, chocolate or vanilla, choose. And we played this game for a little while. And he said, okay, chocolate, choose. And I didn't get it for a little while. And it finally twigged that sometimes your choice is whether or not to choose. Your choice is whether or not to embrace what is or whether to fight it. Whether to use your energy to really just incorporate what is into creating what you want, or to use that same energy to try and push everything away and stay somewhere until something better comes along. And it's a fascinating thing to sit and just choose what is. Because what starts to happen is two things. First one is you start to notice all the things in your life that are there that you haven't chosen. I've been playing with this with clients this week, and I've had clients go, oh my gosh, I haven't chosen my marriage. Another one, I haven't chosen to be a father. You know, somebody else, I haven't chosen this body. I thought I could choose a different one. But what starts to happen is when you choose what is, when you choose chocolate, because chocolate's what's there, then you can start to do stuff with it. It's yours then. It's no longer something that's happened to you. Now it's yours. And now, once it's yours, you can start to do something with it. So what would it be like for you if you just chose that?
It would be a lot easier and less struggling, I suppose.
So how about it? Let's do it right now.
Well, I have and I am. How would you put that in place with drive and motivation and having goals?
With drive and motivation and having goals. What I would do is two things. I would choose for things to be exactly as they are, because why not? Because they are exactly as they are.
Okay.
So I would. Here's a question I ask myself a lot, because I find it a very powerful question. Could I let go of wanting to change this? And what I find is that I get an energetic release. It's almost like a... And then... Once I'm in that place of release, I ask myself, what would I love to create around this? So what would you love to create around motivation and drive?
It would be a path that it would not create anxiety.
Okay. So here's what we're going to do, Geety. I've just realized we're at the end of our show. But can you phone back in next week? I'm going to put you, well, Eric, it's Eric, and I'm going to put you right through at the front of the show next week. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you for those of you who called in. My apologies to those of you on hold. We will get to you next time if you let us know that you called in. You can always learn more at geniuscatalyst.com. And hey, come back. Join me for lunch next week. Join me for dinner. Join me for tea. Bring a friend. I'll supply the cookies. Have fun. Learn heaps. Bye-bye for now.